Fresh data points to racial disparities in coronavirus vaccine rollout in the U.S. Blacks, Hispanics, and other ethnic minorities receiving fewer doses of it. Former U.S. President Donald Trump, who survived his second impeachment trial, says that his patriotic movement has just begun. And Germany adopts more strict measures, including travel bans, amid concerns about a surge in more contagious variants of the coronavirus. Hey everyone, welcome to World News here in the Iranian capital. I'm your host, Bahram Sanjoghi. Good to have you with us. Now let's take a look at the U.S. new data there suggesting that the country is struggling with racial disparities in COVID immunization. Blacks, Hispanics, and other ethnic minorities are receiving fewer doses of vaccines in Washington state. The data released by the state's health department suggests that just a quarter of Hispanics have received a vaccine, despite accounting for 13.2% of Washington's population. Among other ethnic groups that make up 4.3% of the state's population, just 0.3% have been fully vaccinated. By contrast, nearly 66% of whites have been administered the vaccine. There have been similar reports from other states, including Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Mississippi, and Florida, suggesting that blacks are receiving vaccinations at dramatically lower rates than white Americans. A CNN analysis of five metro areas, including Chicago, Atlanta, and Houston, showed a similar trend against blacks and Hispanics. Continuing with the U.S. Development, Senate has voted to acquit former President Donald Trump, sparing him from conviction in his second impeachment trial in a year.
The Senate, having tried Donald John Trump, former President of the United States, upon one article of impeachment exhibited against him by the House of Representatives, and two-thirds of the senators present, not having found him guilty of the charge contained therein, it is therefore ordered and adjudged that the said Donald John Trump be, and he is hereby, acquitted of the charge in said article.
The upper chamber of Congress voted 57 guilty against 43 not guilty. While that fell short of the two-thirds majority needed to convict Trump, he was accused of inciting an insurrection on the Capitol last month, as lawmakers were certifying Joe Biden as the next president. Despite his acquittal, a bipartisan majority cast votes found Trump guilty. In a statement, the former president, however, called the trial the greatest witch hunt in U.S. history. He said that his political movement, quote, has just begun. But Biden said that the substance of the charges against Trump is not in question despite his acquittal. That was echoed by Senate Republican Mitch McConnell.
There's no question, none, that President Trump is practically and morally responsible for provoking the events of the day. No question about it.
Democratic Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer also slammed the vote to exonerate Trump as un-American. He said that the 43 senators who voted not guilty will forever be linked to Trump's, quote, terrible legacy. Democrats had warned that acquitting the former president would open the door for future presidents to violate their office in the final weeks of their presidency without suffering any accountability. Colin Campbell, our correspondent in D.C., joined us earlier and briefed us on the outcome of Trump's impeachment trial.
The Senate voted to acquit the president, and I think that was to be expected. This whole week, we've been listening to testimony from both sides and the widespread criticism of the former president's defense team as they cobbled together an argument that at times seemed rambling and unfocused, but at other times just seemed somewhat sophomoric, especially in the montage of the word fight, which was part of their defense. The whole time, people knew, most everyone knew, that the president, former president, would be acquitted and that he would not be convicted. There are only seven Republicans who joined Democrats, far short of the 17 that they needed. And I believe that many didn't even think that they would get seven at times. There was this argument that the former president couldn't be put on trial because he was not the president anymore, and impeachment was focused on presidents or people who are still holding office. But there was precedent that had already been set that not everyone who is found guilty to be impeached needed to be in office. But the Republicans largely did not want to believe that. They did not want to accept that in part of their decision making. And one can only think that it's mostly partisan, that they still wanted to show that they were in alignment with Trump, that they supported the Republican Party, and they didn't want to face a lot of their constituents who they would have a lot of questions to answer if they had voted to convict former President Trump.
U.S. President Joe Biden's aide to T.J. Ducklow has resigned, becoming the first White House staffer to leave since the new administration took office. The White House says it's accepted the resignation of Ducklow, who was suspended for 1 week without pay. Ducklow, who worked as White House deputy spokesman, handed over his resignation after threatening to destroy a reporter who had asked him about his personal life. The White House said that the new administration is committed to striving every day to meet the standards set by the president in treating others with dignity and respect. Ducklow later apologized to the reporter, calling the language he used abhorrent, disrespectful, and unacceptable. China is firing back at the U.S. for raising concerns about the World Health Organization's report on the origins of COVID-19. Beijing accused Washington of harming multilateral cooperation between the two countries and even damaging the WHO in recent years. It urged Washington to stop pointing fingers at China and other countries that supported the world body during the pandemic. Beijing welcomes Washington's decision to re-engage with the WHO, though. It called on the U.S. to hold itself to the highest standards instead of taking aim at others. That after U.S. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan urged China to make available data from the earliest days of the COVID outbreak, he expressed concerns about the way the findings of WHO's investigation were communicated. A short while ago, we were joined by a Beijing correspondent, Stephen Rebay, to talk more about the simmering row between China and the U.S. over the WHO's probe into COVID origins.
I see it as making two overall arguments. The first argument is that the US has not been supporting the WHO. This is supposed to be a multilateral, a joint effort by everybody to prevent future outbreaks. The only way that future outbreaks of a virus such as this one will be prevented from turning into a global pandemic is if all countries cooperate together. The mechanism for that is the WHO. The US, said under President Trump, said it was going to withdraw from the WHO and cut funding. The British Lancet magazine, medical magazine, pointed out that that is actually unlawful. It violates a resolution that the US made under Harry Truman, President Harry Truman, when it joined the WHO in 1948. So that's one argument. The second broad argument that China is making is that the US has a massive ulterior motive in this whole exercise, and that is to turn public opinion against China.
Brazil is reporting more than 1,000 new COVID-related deaths as the Americas is struggling to contain the pandemic. Brazil still has the world's second largest COVID deaths toll, with more than 238,000 fatalities. The South American nation also reported 44,000 new confirmed cases, raising the tally to some 9.8 million. Meantime, COVID-19 infections and deaths continue to surge in the U.S. despite the country's vaccination program. According to the Johns Hopkins University, the virus has infected 27.5 million people and claimed more than 483,000 lives in the world's worst-hit country. American health officials saying that out of nearly 70 million vaccines distributed, 50 million have been administered. Germany has adopted more strict measures, including travel bans, amid concerns over a surge in more contagious variants of the coronavirus. Authorities have banned travel from Czech border regions and the state of the Tyrol in Austria. 1,000 police officers have been mobilized to ensure strict border controls. The state-owned rail company also suspended services to and from the affected areas. In late January, Germany banned most travelers from countries classed as so-called mutation areas, or places hardest hit by new and more contagious COVID variants. While those include Britain, South Africa, Brazil, and Portugal, only a handful of exceptions are allowed to enter Germany from those countries, including returning Germans and essential workers, such as doctors. Protesters have taken to the streets of the Austrian capital in defiance of a police ban to demonstrate against the government's COVID restrictions. At least two police officers were injured as they attempted to disperse the crowd. Demonstrators say they are against wearing face masks and they do not want their children to take mandatory COVID tests in schools. Omaleski reports.
Protesters hold a huge rally in Vienna's city center, defying a police ban on what's become regular rallies in Austria against the government-imposed restrictions to curb the spread of the coronavirus. Police put the official number of protesters at 2,000, but organizers said there were much more people, many of whom were forcefully barred from joining the bigger rallies.
Despite the police ban, thousands have been taking part in demonstrations like this over the past weeks. It looks like the arrests that have been made by the police during this time has done little to deter these crowds.
Many of the demonstrators said they were against the recently announced rule for older school children to take mandatory COVID tests and wear masks in school.
They have to test, they have to wear masks, they can't breathe in all this madness they have to do at school. And they have to stop now because they destroy actually our children. And the children, they are sick now in the brain because of all this madness going on here. And not because of the virus. They are sick because of the politicians.
Most of the protesters did not wear masks and were vocal in their dismissal.
There is no valid evaluation behind this. The government can say this is the reason when we do not use it that we get sick, and this is absolutely nonsense.
Local media said protesters included high-profile members of far-right and neo-Nazi groups. Several people were arrested, and at least two police officers were injured. The government's management of the COVID crisis has also been criticized by industrial groups who argue the restrictions are killing jobs, growth and wealth. For now, with infections still high, the government has decided to keep hotels and restaurants closed while reopening schools, shops and services. Homolezki, Vienna.
Staying with Europe, Catalonia. People there are heading for polls for regional parliamentary elections. As expected to test the strength of the Spanish region's pro-independence movement. Pro-independence parties, who are now in power in the region, are competing with socialists who lead Spain's central government. Recent opinion polls showed socialists who oppose independence are slightly ahead. The vote is an important signal of an appeal by pro-independence groups and could affect the political trajectory of their movement. If separatists manage to retain control of the regional parliament, a new independence declaration appears very unlikely due to division among parties. The turnout is expected to be low due to the coronavirus pandemic. From Barcelona, let's bring in Kusai Khetri, our correspondent. Good to have you with us, Kusai, and hopefully you're safe from this killer virus. So what can we expect could happen during the course of the election? How strong could this pro-independence drive be?
Difficult to predict how strong it is at this stage. As you stated, this election is happening in the midst of a pandemic. Even the elements seem to be against it. This is a very rainy day across the region, so that would be another element to take into account when people have to decide whether they will go out, show at the polls and vote, or stay at home. Some 5.5 registered voters are expected to cast their ballots today. The big unknown is how many of those registered voters will eventually show up at the polls. It is a high stakes election, not only for Catalans, but for Spaniards as well. As you said, it is an election in which Catalans will have to choose between two models of government, whether to continue with a decade of troubled politics led by the pro-independence movement, who believe that they could eventually reach independence, or turn the page, as is the favorite expression of their main rival, the socialist, and then go back to a period of pro-Spanish unity government. None of the two seem to be leading the race so far. There are various polls, each indicating one direction. The one you mentioned does show a little edge for the pro-independence movement, particularly for the Republican Left Party. And in the others, it seems that the socialists are edging or are leading this election. This will be decided tonight at 8 p.m., shortly after that that time, when the polling stations close. Polling stations have opened at 9 in the morning today, some with a delay due to one big handicap that's facing election officials, which is the lack of supervisors. Not all polling stations have supervisors. The situation is so critical that people, the supervisors themselves, fearing the fact that they may be infected, have preferred to stay home or to miss out on the election. The government has given a press conference a short while ago assuring people that they will be, that all the polling tables will be constituted before the end of this morning. That will remain to be seen. There are very, very strict measures in place. We as cameramen and reporters are allowed a very specific time to show up at the polls and be able to shoot some images. My turn comes sometime after 12 o'clock. What we also can say, and very, very quickly, is that this election has some 100,000 personnel to supervise the vote.
Right. Okay. We'll wait and see how it will go. Thank you very much for that. From Barcelona, Gusai Kedre. Now, the United Nations Food Agency says that a record 12.4 million people in Syria are struggling to find enough food to eat. The World Food Program says that the figure means 60% of the population in the war-torn country is now food insecure. WFP's spokeswoman Jessica Lawson says it's alarming that a basic meal is beyond the reach of the majority of Syrian families. A decade of war and militancy has ravaged the Syrian economy and sent inflation rates soaring across the nation. The Syria conflict has killed more than 387,000 people, displacing millions more since it began in 2011. Political commentator Judith Fellow says that the alarming food insecurity in Syria is caused by Washington's sanctions on the Arab nation.
This is caused by the sanctions the United States has placed on Syria, which are essentially a part of their war on Syria. This is a siege war. This is a way to make sure that the people don't eat. It's a medieval tactic of war that they're using on the Syrian people, and they say that they're targeting government officials or whomever, but in fact, their goal is to starve the people into submission. And there is absolutely no excuse for this. Right now, it's nearly impossible to get aid into Syria. They had a whole flap at the United Nations 6 months ago or so, where they were voting on how many entry points the United Nations could have into Syria, but all of the entry points were into northern Syria, into either Idlib or into areas controlled by the Kurds in northern Syria.
That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
This is IRIB English Radio. Iranian news. Iranian culture. Iranian voice. www.parstoday.com/en.
Could you tell a little about yourself?
I'm Eric Shumanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of physics. My dad, who taught me the art of writing, is a
Listeners Special.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and welcome to this week's edition of Listeners Special on this beautiful Sunday, February 14th, 2021. I'm Atef Erfani, hosting this program today. Listeners Special is a Sunday program where your views are presented through emails and letters. So, dear listeners of Listeners Special, contact us and tell us what you think about IRIB English Radio broadcast. If you have any messages for our dear listeners around the world, then record your voice and send it to us and get your voice heard. Remember, dear listeners, Listeners Special, the Sunday program, is your program. It's your views that are important. Well, yesterday was February 13th, and every year World Radio Day is celebrated on February 13th. Kudos to all those who keep their radio buzzing with innovative content. This is fantastic medium which deepens social content. World Radio Day is a global celebration of radio and how it shapes our lives. Radio informs, transforms, and unites us around the world. It brings together people and communities from all backgrounds to foster positive dialogue for change. More specifically, radio is the perfect medium to counter the conflict through building mutual understanding and exposure to other points of view. So, happy the World Radio Day to all listeners of IRIB English Radio. Welcome back. This is Listeners Special. As usual, many of you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, have taken the trouble of sending us reception reports. These reception reports, as you may know, are very useful and important to us, especially to our technicians and engineers. These reception reports actually enable us to provide a better service to you, dear listeners, throughout the world. All of you who have sent in a reception report will be receiving a QSL card from us. However, these days, with the outbreak of coronavirus pandemic, please don't expect a QSL card from IRIB English Radio. As you may know, sending any material on behalf of our radio is temporarily halted due to the pandemic. And after the disease is controlled around the world, then we will get back on the track and send you the souvenirs of IRIB English Radio and also QSL cards. So don't worry about that. And here, I truly appreciate those of our dear listeners who have sent us emails and letters from around the world. And honestly, I'm amazed by the volume of emails and letters which are focused on the World Radio Day, which I mentioned some of their names here, and later during the program, I will read their emails and letters. Here we have an email from Dr. Hemant Kumar from India. Thank you, Dr. Hemant Kumar from India. Dr. Hemant Kumar is one of our regular listeners who have sent us an email on the World Radio Day. Also, we have an email from Rafi Nazmo Sadat from Bangladesh. This is actually a congratulation message on the World Radio Day. Also, Shivanupol from India has also sent us an email. These emails are from all of them are from our regular listeners. Also, Sultan Mahmood Sarkar from Bangladesh has sent us a congratulations message on the World Radio Day. And your Clemens Hoffman from Germany has sent us an email. Of course, there are lots of letters and emails, but I will read these emails and letters during the program. So stay tuned. I will be back with all these messages just after the music. Welcome back to Listeners Special, and we have a congratulations message from Dr. Hemant Kumar from India. Dr. Hemant Kumar, one of our regular listeners, says, Happy World Radio Day 2021 to you and all listeners. World Radio Day seeks to celebrate the importance of the radio in improving international cooperation, providing access to information, and supporting free speech. The day also serves to promote the radio as a means of communication in times of need and emergency. Radios are still the most readily available medium that can disseminate information to reach the widest and most diverse audiences in the shortest amount of time. The idea of World Radio Day was first proposed by Spain's Radio Academy in 2010. The following year, in 2011, UNESCO declared the first World Radio Day. Since then, World Radio Day has been celebrated annually on February 13th, a day chosen to coincide with the anniversary of the United Nations Radio, the UN's International Broadcasting Service, which was established on February 13th, 1946. First of all, salam and greetings to you, Dr. Hemant Kumar from India, and many thanks for such informative email to IRIB English Radio. Thanks a lot. I again congratulate you and all our dear listeners on the World Radio Day 2021. Thanks a lot. Like always, Dr. Hemant Kumar, you sent us an informative email on the radio, which you described that actually World Radio Day seeks to celebrate the importance of the radio in improving international cooperation, providing access to information, and supporting free speech. Thanks a lot, Dr. Hemant Kumar from India. We have an email from Sultan Mahmood Sarkar from Bangladesh. This email focuses on the World Radio Day. Sultan Mahmood Sarkar from Bangladesh says, Dear friends, Assalamu alaikum. Take my congratulations on the World Radio Day, which falls on February 13th. Hope you are well by the grace of Allah. I wish you all good health in this pandemic. Salam and greetings to you, Sultan Mahmood Sarkar from Bangladesh. And I do express my appreciation for sending IRIB English Radio this congratulations message on the World Radio Day. We wish you all the best, Sultan Mahmood Sarkar from Bangladesh. Well, dear listeners, after a short music, I will be back with all emails and letters. Well, you just heard a piece of Iranian traditional music. I really enjoyed it. Here we have an email from India. This email is from Shivandupol. Shivandupol is one of our regular listeners who says, Dear friends at IRIB English Radio, greetings to all staff and listeners and congratulations on the occasion of World Radio Day 2021. UNESCO's World Radio Day falls on February 13th every year.
We are regular listeners of your program. The quality of the programs are very nice. Our club has 125 listeners, and we will be very happy if you send us your program schedule, magazine, sticker for our DX, and philatelic exhibition and some souvenirs for our club members. Salam and greetings to you, Shivandapol from India, and thanks a lot for sending us this email. And also, we congratulate you on the World Radio Day, which falls on February 13th every year. And thanks a lot for writing to IRIB English Radio. Yes, you are, you and your club members are regular listeners of IRIB English Radio broadcast. And we're so happy that you're enjoying the programs. Our efforts has always been and, has always been to improve the quality of the programs day by day. And regarding your request about sending you and your club members the program schedule, magazine, sticker, or other souvenirs of IRIB English Radio, as I have mentioned several times, this tradition has halted temporarily. Actually, this is temporary. We will send our dear listeners very soon in the future, and after the protocols regarding the COVID-19 pandemic is removed, we will send our dear listeners the souvenirs of IRIB English Radio and also QSL cards very soon in the future after the disease is controlled around the world. Thank you very much for sending us this email, Shivandapol from India. We wish you all the best. We wish you and actually all your club members all the best in life. Write to us soon, Shivandapol from India. Also from Bangladesh, we have an email from Rafi Nazmosadat. Rafi Nazmosadat from Bangladesh says, "Dear program organizer, Happy World Radio Day 2021. We wish everyone a very special greeting on this very day. May radio will unite us all to build a peaceful world. We are with you always." Salam and greetings to you, Rafi Nazmosadat from Bangladesh, and lots of gratitude and lots of thanks for writing us this congratulation message on World Radio Day. We wish you all the best, Rafi Nazmosadat from Bangladesh. Yes, may radio will unite us all around the world to build a very peaceful world. Thank you, Rafi Nazmosadat from Bangladesh. Write to us soon. We are waiting for your views on IRIB English radio programs. Dear listeners, what about a short music? Welcome back here. We have an email from Jörg Clemens Hoffmann from Germany. Jörg Clemens says, "Dear friends at IRIB English Radio, best greetings and peace from Germany. It is my very great pleasure to inform you that I have listened to your station in the southwestern part of Germany near the River Rhine. I have picked up IRIB English Radio with a fair to good signal every early Sunday morning. For me, it is always a thrill receiving signals from Iran. Therefore, I'd like to send you this report and an audio recording of the broadcast I have listened to. Often, I tune in to German service of IRIB parts today on shortwave, which is always a pleasure as well. If you will find my report as correct, I would greatly appreciate your EQSL or a short email reply as a verification of my reception. Many thanks in advance. Best greetings to you all at IRIB. Thanks for taking time to read my report." Deep thanks to you, your Clemens Hoffmann from Germany, for writing this email to IRIB English Radio. We are so happy that you are receiving the signals of IRIB English Radio in Germany. As you said, you live near the River Rhine in southwestern part of Germany. Thanks a lot for writing to us. And as you request, of course, in the near future, we will send our dear listeners QSL cards and IRIB materials and souvenirs very soon in the future after the coronavirus disease is controlled around the world. Wish you all the best, your Clemens Hoffmann from Germany. Dear listeners, here we've reached the section of this week's interview, which is conducted with one of our regular listeners. Please take a listen.
My name is Ibrahima. I finished from the International Institute of Journalism here in Abuja. That is the headquarter of Nigeria. And also I make studies. I study in Germany, I study in France, and I study in some parts of African countries. I am not actually a journalist. I'm working with a radio station here in Kaduna. And I also send reports to so many other radio stations around the globe. Well, I must have my kind of job I do is that I have so many things I do, like I do give part, take part-time lectures. I give to some of these part-time university and I deliver lectures on French and German language as a part-time lecturer. And I have so many activities that I used to do. I'm a presenter in a radio station and so many other things. English studies radio station. Fourthly, I must tell you the fact that I attach and I cherish fourthly the style of the presentation that is coming up from the broadcaster. I first listen, it's my orientation that I have even at the Institute of Journalism. When I used to approach my lecturer on the style of news I used to hear from the English service, it's quite different from our own local radio station here. So I am adapted to the radio station, that is the Iran English service, because I learned so many things with them, and as such I put it into my practice before I became a serious, like a senior reporter here. So it really helped me because I listen to the style of the presentation first, and the presenters are always, I don't know how they organize their reporters, but it's something that I just discovered. I always learn something from their reporters, the style of the presentation, the way they organize the room. But I must have to say that I discover most of the news is basically Arab region reports and the news always within the region, and some parts from the Africa, little, but sometimes from Asia, little. But the most of the news is emphasizing mostly on the region of the Arab, most especially Iran. I must say I learned so many things from that radio station. I must say big thanks to them. I keep on listening because I benefited so many things from them so far. Big thanks goes to all the listeners, fans, clubs, all over the world listening to International Radio of Iran. Big thanks to you, and I just want you to know that Iran Radio remains one of the untouchable and reliable, best information circulation, best in all time of news discovery. The first always to bring a breaking news, ready to give you all whatever I would. My best regards to all those listeners all over the world. I wish you the best, and I wish you keep on listening to this best radio station. Best is what I give you, and the radio is ready to give you the best. This is my message to them.
And here we wrap up this week's edition of Listeners Special. So again, I congratulate on the World Radio Day, which fell this year fell on February 13th. That is yesterday. So I congratulate on the World Radio Day to all our listeners of IRIB English Radio. Have a good time and goodbye.
Listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We'll be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send your emails to englishradio@irib.ir. That is one word, englishradio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at www.pasttoday.com/en. Our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Once again, our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Our profile is also in Facebook. Our address is www.facebook.com/pasttodayenglish. Thank you all for being with IRIB English Radio.
The debate.
Hello and welcome to Debate. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. The first International New Horizon Conference was held in 2012 and focused on having a creative hub where academics, artists, politicians, activists, and others could cooperate on discussing various global topics and searching for a solution, from the issue of Palestine to Hollywood to the situation of Black Americans in the United States. The conference held vibrant discussions and served as an effective forum to have these discussions. Well, the conference host is filmmaker and Iranian TV personality Nader Talabzadeh. In 2019, the New Horizon Conference, Mr. Talabzadeh and others who had organized the conference were sanctioned by the United States. Even the FBI approached some of the American participants and warned them of dire consequences if they attended the event. I will be talking to some of the speakers from the conference on this debate. Stay with us, please. I'd like to welcome my guests to this debate, author and former diplomat Michael Springman out of Washington, D.C., editor of Veterans Today, Kevin Barrett out of Madison, and editor-in-chief of American Herald Tribune, Anthony Hall out of Lethbridge, Alberta, Canada. Thank you all for being with us and welcome to the program. Well, let's start it off with Michael. Michael, in your perspective, what were the overall goals of the New Horizon Conference? Because, of course, it's been accused of a range of things by the FBI, by the Department of Treasury in the United States. Your experience, in your perspective, with what you saw and experienced, what do you think the overall goals were?
Well, the goals, specifically at the conference I was at to talk about Palestine, however, I think the principal goal was to bring together a group of people from all over the world with different backgrounds and different skills and abilities to meet and talk together and try and come to an understanding and produce a common program for change. When I was at the conference, I sat next to an Arab journalist and a woman who had been to the first Gaza relief expedition, the only one that the Zionists didn't attack. There were people there who had formerly been with the Central Intelligence Agency. There were Hungarian politicians, Serbian journalists. It was a group of people from, including German politicians, along with a rabbi, David Weiss from New York City, and Nico Peled, an Israeli-American, It was a tremendously disparate group of people who shared a common goal in trying to make the world better. And, of course, Sigal Pearl Mandelker, the Undersecretary of the Treasury for Terrorism and Financial Intelligence, put a stop to that by sanctioning the conference, the management, and threatening all sorts of horrible actions to anyone who dared to go into any other conference organized by the New Horizon people.
Okay. Well, I'm going to get to that
part. In my
part.
View, it was the grandest adventure
Stay
of my life.
Stay with me, Michael. I'm going to get to that part in the second question, but I want to get each of my guests as a perspective on their experiences at the conference. Kevin, your take, what did you find? What did you experience at the New Horizon conference that you participated in?
Well, it was almost like a kind of international summit for alternative media and alternative intellectuals, people who, for one reason or another, have been blacklisted in the West and who are looking into the issues that are completely taboo in Western media and the academy. And, of course, these are in many ways the most important issues. So it was really like going to a kind of a summit with a lot of the people that I admired and hadn't gotten to know in person before. I'd only known them through the internet, and then getting to actually meet them was fantastic. And I think it's interesting that some of the most important and groundbreaking thinkers in the West have to go to Tehran to meet. That's why we had Dr. E. Michael Jones calling Tehran the capital of the free world, because the so-called free world is not so free these days. And it, you know, features, we're not talking about people from a particular ideological tendency. We had everybody from the pretty far left mainstream, like Senator Mike Gravel, one of the great heroes of the anti-Vietnam War movement, one of the heroes of the Democratic Party, later in the Libertarian and Green parties. And then we've also had people on the right, like Dr. Jones, among many others. So it was very well balanced in terms of different worldviews and perspectives, and yet everyone there is facing certain issues truthfully, and these are the issues that you're just not going to face truthfully in the United States of hypocrisy, and in the equally hypocritical states of Europe these days. So it's here in the United States, it feels rather ironic that in this land of freedom with the First Amendment, we have to go to Tehran to engage in free speech.
Okay, stay with me. What about that, Anthony? You heard what Kevin said, and we've heard this before, because I also was at a couple of the conferences, and I heard people actually say that they felt so free and being able to discuss issues that perhaps they could not have discussed in the United States. Your take and your experience.
Yes, of course, I did not appreciate how I'm getting feedback in my earphones. I didn't appreciate how closed, how constrained the discussion was in North American academic circles until I went in 2014 to the New Horizon Conference in Tehran and heard one was very, you know, interested to meet people from Iran and hear new perspectives in that respect, but also to meet Europeans from many parts of Europe, North Americans, basically people who use the English language in dissident positions in their own home turf. And so I was introduced and stretched, and my capacities were stretched to try to move along with the discussion and open myself up. Then after the meeting, what was surprising to me was the Anti-Defamation League, Egg Foxman, to hear these condemnations, these blanket condemnations of everybody at the conference as Holocaust deniers, as conspiracy theorists, as 9/11 truthers, all these weaponized terms used on steroids in a way. I was introduced to the kind of, I guess, big leagues of the polemics at the global level.
Well, going back to you, Michael, I mean, why would the United States have a problem with a forum and that most people would say it was quite dynamic and is quite dynamic, and allowing political perspectives across the gamut for people to sit down and discuss and talking about various problems and trying to come up with solutions and solidarity across the world. Why would this be problematic for Washington?
Well, it's problematic because Washington is controlled by the Zionists. Jews form 2% of the American population, yet they are controlling most of the foreign policy agencies in the Biden administration now. They are desperately afraid of free speech more and more in the United States, aside from the Zionist people. They don't want anything that contradicts the official line of American policy, whether you're dealing with the virus, whether you're dealing with September 11th, or whether you're dealing with the basics of American foreign policy. And in Iran, in Tehran, it was a freewheeling, open discussion of people with disparate backgrounds, disparate viewpoints, who yet got along, who respected each other. And this is something the United States doesn't want, because Iran, to it and its supporters in the apartheid entity that styles itself Israel, is that Iran is a dangerous, malign influence in the region and is building atomic bombs under every bed in the country, and they're going to use them all against Israel. So the whole idea of the United States objecting to any kind of freewheeling discussion in Iran is anathema, because it shows that Iran is a democratic country that permits opposing viewpoints, whatever that they might be.
Kevin, your perspective, when you look at, as far as the slogans that we hear all the time in the United States, and also, as Michael said, what is said about Iran, there's a 180-degree difference, it seems, from the reality. So people from the West were invited to the Islamic Republic of Iran to hold these dynamic discussions, but then the United States couldn't handle that. Do you think that this is a sign of a waning empire, that even it fears open discussions in an international forum?
Yes, I think the current crackdown on free speech, which has gone further and further in so many ways, and the ridiculous attack on New Horizon under false pretenses, is one aspect of this war on free speech, which is really a war against the founding principles of the American Republic, because there wouldn't have been any American Republic and American Constitution if the critics of the original version of the Constitution hadn't been able to get the Bill of Rights added. And the First Amendment is the heart of the Bill of Rights, and in many ways the heart of the Constitution. And you know, the U.S. is not an ethnic state. It doesn't have a deep history. It's not one people going back for millennia. It's a group of people from all over the world who are living together according to these Enlightenment principles, and free speech to free inquiry are right at the very. But today we're seeing that roll back in so many different ways. And I think that with the issue of who was trying to shut down New Horizon, it wasn't so much the realist American imperialist people. Remember, this was during the Obama administration, which followed the Bush-Cheney years with 9/11 and the so-called war on terror, the declaration against the Axis of Evil and so on. And then Obama was supposed to change that, and he did to some extent bring in a slightly different group of people who had less problem really with New Horizon than the neocons do. And so it wasn't the Obama administration that was trying to stop us from going to Iran. On the contrary, I actually was treated quite respectfully every time I went. I had only one interrogation on the way back from Iran after going to New Horizon conferences almost every year from 2013 on. And that interrogation was just a minute and a half friendly conversation, really. So I think things really came to a head there sort of towards the end of the Obama administration, and then with the Trump administration, as the neocons turned things around. And their main concern is the state of Israel and the power of the Zionist lobby in the world and in the West. And I think they're terrified that American intellectuals will see eye to eye with Canadians like Dr. Hall, and with Europeans, and with Russians, and with Iranians, especially, and recognize that U.S. policy in the Middle East is not benefiting the U.S. at all. It's actually shooting the U.S. in the foot. We've wasted $7 trillion on these post-9/11 wars for Israel. So the pound, free speech around human rights, as Mike Springman says, were basically Israel people, lobbyists and so on, the Anti-Defamation League, and then when the Obama administration gave way to the Trump administration and the Zio-cons or neocon Zionists came back into power, they're totally banned Americans from going to any New Horizon conferences under penalty of going to prison when you come back from Lebanon or Iran or what have you. This is really about protecting Israel and protecting Israel's power over the United States. And if ordinary Americans could see that this war on America and the war on America's First Amendment is being waged on behalf of an extremely hostile foreign entity, the State of Israel, that has repeatedly attacked the U.S. in false flag terrorism, from Operation Susanna in the 50s to the Liberty Incident in 1967 to the controlled demolition of the Trade Center on September 11, 2001, Americans essentially declare war on Israel. And the issue, the elephant in the room, it was Zionists who had to try to put a stop to Americans and Iranians having dialogue and trying to figure out what's really going on.
Okay. Well, Anthony, your take, you heard what Kevin said. I want to look at that because with what happened to New Horizon Conference and the organizers of the New Horizon Conference basically being sanctioned, trying to the United States to shut them down, perhaps an average American, if they heard this story, didn't feel that it affected them. But as the old saying goes, and then they came for me, because if we fast forward now to 2021 in the United States, and we see how censorship continues to get worse and worse inside of the country, how alternative perspectives and even which some perspectives which was once considered mainstream are being shut down and controlled. I want your perspective about that, because perhaps many Americans did not speak out for the sanctions against Iran in general and against, for example, like a New Horizon conference. Has that backfired now?
Well, we could see a sign of trouble on the horizon in 2019 at Beirut when I attended the New Horizon conference, the last one. Kevin and Michael Springman couldn't go to that one. The U.S. people were kept out. And then came the year 2020, a year of enormous divisiveness in the United States between the people who supported Trump, the so-called deplorables, and the Biden group, which had a tremendous alliance of power behind it. But even at the height of all of this crisis in 2020, the one thing that both sides seemed to be able to agree upon was that Iran is the biggest enemy, and the propaganda and pressure kept coming from Israel to these wars for Israel. The sort of penultimate one would be the invasion of Iran, which has been pushed for and pushed for and pushed for. And I think even now, with all that's happened, Americans have a hard time to see that the invisibility of this Israel lobby, and it is kept behind walls and barriers and censorship, this unity to support Israel and point towards this sort of ultimate goal of invading and doing regime change in Iran, this is so consistent, and we have very little testimony on mainstream media about this. And it is the most destabilizing force in the world, really.
Well, Michael, you just heard Anthony talk about Americans not being able to attend the conference in Beirut. What does that mean? Explain to our audience, as an American, when you're told that you're not allowed to travel somewhere and participate in the conference, tell us what happened.
Well, I frankly was outraged at this. The whole issue of sanctions is being run by a Zionist-controlled Office of Foreign Assets Control that goes back to 1950 and Harry Truman and China and the Korean War. The issue, of course, is it limited my freedom to travel.